Hello, America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Our topic today is anarchy and peaceful cooperation, the views of a construction working philosopher. And with us today is our very special guest, Mr. Mark Crivelli. Mark, hello.
Hello.
And welcome. All right, let me tell everybody about you a little bit. So, folks, Mark has a master's degree in political science from the University of Colorado in Boulder, and he is a frequent contributor to LouRockwell.com and the Journal of Libertarian Studies. But be sure to check out his works at Libertarian Papers. I'd like you all to know that Mark is a serious and brilliant philosopher and social thinker, and we're very glad to have him with us today. So also with us today is Mr. Luke McGraw. Hello, Luke.
Hello, Michael.
Well, I'm glad to have you here as well, again. So everyone, you should know that Luke is a familiar voice here on Radio Free Market. He is one of our special commentators. And Luke is a fellow at the Mankow Education Foundation in Western Australia and a graduate of Mises University 2010. So Luke is also the principal organizer for this particular show. Now, first things first, I think we should probably clarify the meaning of the word anarchy. When people hear this term, they think of crazy people throwing bricks through windows and smashing up cars and so on. You know, for most people, anarchy is synonymous with chaos. But when political philosophers and economists use the word anarchy or anarchism, they use it in quite a different sense. Would you be able to briefly explain to us, Mark, what exactly you mean by this word anarchy?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that political philosophers define it somewhat differently, because that's the field that I come from, and they tend to have the same biases against anarchism that everybody else does. But I guess I would define it as simply non-aggression. People are not allowed to commit violent acts against one another. So that's really it to me. I don't take it to be to mean anything more than that, actually.
You know, one of our friends, Stefan Kinsella, he has a quote that's akin to this. To be an anarchist only means that you believe that aggression is not justified and that states necessarily employ aggression, and therefore that states and the aggression they necessarily employ are unjustified. You know, I personally like this term peaceful cooperation instead of the term anarchy because of the connotation that it generally brings up. Peaceful cooperation really is more of a descriptor of what this actually is that we're talking about. Would you comment on that, Mark?
Yeah, I think that that's actually true. It kind of depends on your audience. I find that anarchism, the word is sometimes quite useful because sometimes it's quite helpful to point out to people, to use the term and then have them open their jaws wide and then if you just explain what the term means, sometimes it's very enlightening. And really, I guess they would go hand in hand. And peaceful cooperation is certainly more more an accurate description of what we're talking about than anarchism. Anarchism is kind of empty. The word is kind of empty.
Yeah, so, I agree. Peaceful cooperation is a term that kind of points us in the direction that what the whole concept of anarchism is really about. And, this is a very short segment, and so we've already hit our commercial break. And so, everyone, please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, talking with Mark Crivelli and Luke McGraw, and we'll be back in just a minute. So stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and this is Michael McKay talking with Mr. Mark Crivelli and our special commentator, Mr. Luke McGraw. Now, Luke, you had a question that you wanted to pose to Mark. Please go ahead.
Great. So just to emphasize then, Mark, when by advocating anarchy, that does not mean that you think there should be some violent overthrow of society or anything like that, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I have kind of a bad temper. Sometimes people get on me about my writing for that. I have kind of a bad temper, but that certainly doesn't mean that I advocate that sort of violence, and especially aimless violence. I certainly would defend violence and self-defense, but as just being an anarchist does not necessarily imply that I endorse that kind of indiscriminate murder or anything like that.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
So what do you think of the view that without government we'd all be fighting each other and stealing and robbing one another? Do you think that's a very realistic assertion?
Yeah, I think it's about the most asinine thing, really, that people believe these days. I think I run into people who have some pretty insane ideas that they try to push on me, but when they try to tell me that cops or politicians are somehow keeping us safe or keeping us from killing each other, it's just so... so out of touch with my view of the world that it
right.
just seems
well, you
like
know,
it's
obvious that society would have collapsed a long time ago if we were this eager to fight one another.
Exactly.
But
so, Luke, go ahead. You had another
there's
question you wanted to go to. You wanted to
yeah, Mark, anarcho-capitalists, which is a type of anarchism, oppose the state because of moral reasons and utilitarian reasons. Let's explore the morality criticism first. Why do you believe that the state isn't a moral institution?
Well, it's really, I guess it's quite simple, really. I'm a small business owner. I have a construction company, and I'm not allowed to, it's not just that I'm not allowed to go around taking things from other people or killing other people. It's that I have... an inner moral objection to doing that to other people, and I think that it's wrong for anybody to do that. So this is really what we're talking about when we're talking about taxes and locking people up for smoking something or really anything the state does. It's just the kind of violence that I would never engage in or ever tolerate from other people that I interact with on a daily basis.
You know, we notice that the state typically has two different sets of, or excuse me, that there are two sets of rules. Most people notice that one for the state and one for everyone else, and this is a common moral criticism. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, it's really I come from a Catholic background, and the first thing that we were always taught is that. Everybody's equal and in the eyes of God, and that people have inherent rights. That's something that comes from public school even. And the kinds of things that I'm not allowed to do, other people are, apparently, if we have a government. Soldiers are allowed to kill people indiscriminately and drop bombs on Pakistani wedding parties, and these sorts of things are completely prohibited, rightly prohibited of ordinary people, but as soon as people put on a uniform or a badge, then suddenly they're allowed to kill people. And
and it's called
really,
collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly. It's shocking, really, when you think about it, that people could tolerate such a thing. If their friends tried to pull something like that on them, they would just laugh at them or beat them up, really, because they wouldn't tolerate that.
So all you're basically saying then is that we should hold the state to the same moral standards that we hold everyone else to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned to me, Luke, when we were talking about and preparing this show, no one would think you're a generous and kind person if you take some of your neighbor's possessions and give them to someone who you feel is more deserving. You know, people would recognize the theft, but for some reason this doesn't apply to government. Now, there are many people who would claim, though, that Mark, that democratic government is different. You know, unlike, say, socialism or fascism, democratic government is legitimate because it's, quote, government by the people for the people. What would you say to this?
Yeah, and I would say that the exact same principles apply here, that if a bunch of your friends wanted to go do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do as an individual to somebody else, it's almost certainly wrong if a bunch of people try to do it. So, and really, I think that something's very interesting involved in this, in that lots of people despise their friends and think their friends have terrible taste in art and terrible taste in movies, and yet they somehow think that their friends have taken together, that they're going to come up with some miraculously good government. It just seems, again, just seems almost insane to me that people could really believe this, that just because a whole bunch of people believe something, or not even necessarily believe it, they just want to do something to some other people, that somehow this is like a sanction for it, or it somehow becomes the right outcome. It seems literally insane to me.
Well, you know, there's an old explanation or example of what a democracy is, of two wolves and a chicken voting on what's for dinner, and so the protection of the minority's rights is a fundamental problem in society. When the majority can vote itself superiority over the minority.
Yeah.
How would you comment that?
There seems to be kind of a weird kind of psychological thing going on here as well, where people in the public arena view themselves as part of the majority, and they take pride in being part of the majority. But it's funny that we're all just individuals, and thinking of yourself as being part of some larger group that's doing something to some other people, like soldiers, typically. You talk to soldiers, they have this view often. But you're just an individual, and if you do something, you're responsible for it. And if you do something to some person just because they happen to you outnumber them, it just seems patently wrong.
Well, what would your response be, Mark, to someone who would say, well, you know, if you don't like it here, you should just leave?
Yeah, you know, I get that a lot.
That's a common one you hear, yeah.
Yeah, people tell me that all the time because they, I have a kind of a different view from most tradesmen in that I really like the Mexicans that are around and I work with, and they tell me, well, if you don't like these guys getting deported, then you should get out yourself. So it's funny that because I'm just as much an American as anybody else, and I'm also technically allowed to vote, even though I never would do that. So it's funny that you can, on the one hand, believe in democracy and believe in people having the right to vote and have their say, and then on the other hand, tell them if they don't like the outcome, then get out. It seems to be an inner contradiction there.
Well, you know, when people hear that you're completely opposed to the government, they probably also think that you're completely opposed to police and security, courts, hospitals, schools, roads, and so on, because these are all functions that people associate with government. But this is not your argument at all, is it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Although I am opposed to the current police system and the current healthcare system and the current road system in this country and others. I'm not anti-roads, for example. They never make this argument that I'm anti-roads, which is funny. I am for privatizing them. I think that competition is phenomenal. It makes things much better. If I was allowed to get a check for any of the projects that I do, whether I did a good job or a bad job, and I couldn't lose my job, I would probably become a pretty awful person pretty quickly. And
I'd like to talk about this privatization thing as we go along. We can weave it into the conversation, but I'd like to point out one thing. On November 28th, Sunday, my wife and I were watching the syndicated show on CBS, the CBS Sunday Morning show, and they had this report on volunteer fire departments. What was very interesting, and I was unaware of this, is that 75% of all firefighters in the United States today are unpaid volunteers. I thought that was absolutely remarkable. In Wisconsin alone, 800 of the 870 different fire departments are all volunteer. And what's also very interesting is that there was a comment by someone that said that this is the backbone of the entire firefighting system in the entire United States, and that it saves $37 billion in wages a year. Well, you push a calculator to that, you find out in 25 years, that's $925 billion. That's, virtually $1 trillion that saves in wages by these volunteer people.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get you to comment on that when we get back, but
okay.
Unfortunately, again, we're coming into our break. And so thank you very much for being with us, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We're having a fascinating conversation with Mark Crivelli and Luke McGraw on anarchy and peaceful cooperation. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market. And just before the break, Mark, we were talking about privatization and that there is a market for voluntary cooperation to provide for these goods like police, security, courts, schools, roads, and I was mentioning fire departments as well. Did you have an additional comment that you would like to make on that?
Yeah, I've worked in I was actually in the fire academy when I was in high school, and I got my firefighter one certification, and I had to, part of that was going along on ride-alongs, and house fires are actually very rare. That's one thing that's pretty interesting, and a lot of people think that houses are burning down all over the place, and we need all these firefighters, but it's really rare. Basically glorified paramedics for the most part, but one thing that was really interesting is that on the ride-alongs, we would go to fires, sometimes grass fires, and I went to a house fire where the volunteers had showed up at the same time as the public police force, and the public police force wouldn't go in, so they sent in the volunteers who were much better, and they put the fire out, and then afterwards, they all got together, and I got to go to the big meeting, and they were all trying to take credit for what had happened. But the volunteers, because they're not recognized as much by the unions and by even the state government, they're almost completely unrecognized, and the so the public force took credit for that. And you see this also in the trades as well, where I worked for an irrigation company for a couple of years, and we did irrigation support for the Denver Public Schools. And we would go out to the jobs, and they have their own irrigation force, but they don't really work. They just put flags out where the damaged stuff is, and they send the private people out to go fix it because they're so lazy and incompetent. So you see this quite a lot in the trades, especially the unionized trades and stuff. It's if you're paying attention, it's just all over the place. For the privatized for-profit groups are infinitely more competent and provide things so much more cheaply. It's just shocking, really, when you see it.
So Luke, go ahead with your next point.
Sure. I just wanted to get back to the other part with regarding the government. So for you, Mark, when you say there's there actually is a big difference then between what we could call civil society, and by that I mean businesses and community organizations and churches and so on. So there's a big difference between all of those things and the state or the government.
Yeah, yeah. I think you sometimes run into this in your ordinary life when you have to deal with the political society. Almost always, with people that I know anyway, the blood pressure goes up, and the anger goes up, and the frustration goes up. And in your ordinary dealings with regular people who are just like you, and I guess if you're a bureaucrat, this might not apply, but you have basically cooperative relationships with almost everybody, and anything that's not cooperative, you just sort of drop and you leave them out of your life. But with the state, this is impossible, and it's a constant irritation, a constant friction against our peaceful lives, otherwise peaceful lives.
So there's a difference then really between voluntary actions and coercive actions.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. People deal with one another differently in those relationships, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, therefore you don't think that the state is needed for society to have peaceful cooperation?
No, no. I think, I mean, it's funny. I used to be kind of an armchair libertarian who was sort of an anarchist in principle, but now with the growth of the state in America these days, it's so obvious to me that the state is just completely immoral in every respect. I mean, there's nothing that they do that is either useful or moral. So it just seems almost absurd to me to not be an anarchist. And the WikiLeaks leaks recently just drove this point home, where you have this cabal of high-level bureaucrats who are making enormous amounts of money off of us, running around setting up these insanely criminal, often, relationships with one another. It shocks me that somebody could read the WikiLeaks cables and not become an anarchist, really.
Right. Yeah, and these trumped-up charges that are being leveled against this guy, you know, and to read the detail on that, which is not very savory reading, but at the same time demonstrates just how desperate the state is to try to find something to pin on this guy so that they can shut him down.
Exactly.
And,
he is a great hero, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, very interesting. So, Luke, you're going to have the lead on this next whole segment, and so you want to get it started now. You've got 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. What you're basically saying then, Mark, I guess, is that if economics can explain to us why markets give us the best iPods and cars and houses and things like that, then those same principles should also apply to all the services that the government provides.
And the short answer is going to have to be yes.
Yeah.
And but we're going to have to take our next break, and so we'll get back with the rest of your answer right in a minute. So, folks, please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and our special commentator, Luke McGraw, you're on. Go for it.
Cool. I was just, before we hit the break, Mark, I was just saying that economics can explain to us why markets gives us all these great products at cheaper and cheaper prices and better quality, but but those principles should also apply to all the services that the government provides, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people who work in the private sector recognize this inherently. If you do a good job, you're going to make more money, and if you don't, you're going to lose your job, typically, or else you're going to be making less than you otherwise could. So it's almost obvious to people in the private sector, except that they somehow think that there are these other parts of the economy that are somehow miraculously different, and somehow the firefighters and the police are different. They do a job that's radically different than from what they do, and that's just not the case. Everything we do is to serve other people, and we make money doing that if we serve them. And the police are no different. The police now are different in that they don't have to serve us to get their paychecks. But in principle, they are no different than anybody else. They ought
to be. If I could jump in here for just a minute.
Sure.
You know, when I get into this conversation at this particular point, what I like to point out is that government is a product. It produces a product, and we buy that product. And we have to think of government, quote-unquote, services as products. Are we getting the product that we want? And why, if we are, why? And if we are not, why? And in the context of that, it becomes very clear that there are a lot of problems, you know, with them. And so I'd like you to comment on that, if you would, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it strikes me as kind of strange when you see millions of people in jail for petty things like shoplifting and smoking pot. It just strikes me as something that, along with what you're saying, that really should pique our interest. Are they really providing us with a government and a system of living that is really making people happy? When you have millions of people in jail and tens of millions of families ruined for these trivial reasons, it's like a red light that should be going off in people's heads to say that something's wrong. And really, freedom and peaceful cooperation with one another ought to be the obvious remedy to much of this.
The trouble, I guess, is that the incentives are kind of reversed for government services because, you know, in the market, if someone provides something good, they get rewarded with you know, more and more money. But in government, if they screw up, that's usually the case for, oh, okay, we need more money. And so they give them more money, and they screw up even more, and then it's, okay, we need more money to fix that. It's sort of, they're completely, they reverse. You know, the incentives are all wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You see this in every bureaucratic agency. The incentive is to constantly be in a crisis mode, and they and constantly extorting money out of Congress, or and this sometimes happens in the nonprofit sector, which is often kind of intertwined with the public sector as well, and it's constantly a fight for budgets that are assigned by Congress and not by people paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they suffer from two problems. They suffer from a inadequate knowledge and inadequate ability to calculate, you know, which are very related. You know, in other words, they can't they don't have any metric by which they can actually evaluate, since they don't face the profit and loss test right from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. I wrote an article for Lou Rockwell about this actually a couple of years ago. We get relatively mild snowstorms here in Colorado, but sometimes they're severe. And when they're severe, watch out, because the city and county of Denver in particular will be trying to get more money out of their taxpayers to do what they're paid to do anyway, because they didn't do it. So it's funny. It's actually kind of tragic to watch, because we pay these people to plow the roads, and when they don't do it well, they want more money. Sort of like a contractor who lays a bad foundation and keeps coming back to you to say that, well, I did it badly, so give me more money. It's it would be laughable if we weren't all caught up in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm very interested in these non-governmental solutions, you know, to different things. You know, we talked about the firefighters. That was a surprise to a lot of people, I'm sure, that, you know, three-quarters of our firefighting force in the United States is voluntary. In other words, they're taxpayers that also step up and volunteer to do the work as well. There's other programs or businesses out there that provide services that, like, for example, Underwriter Laboratories provides testing of all electronic gear, and they get that nice little symbol, that UL symbol on it. Well, you know, that's not a government agency, That's an agency that is a for-profit business, and businesses that want to produce hair dryers and whatnot, they want that UL seal of approval, boom. They've got to submit it to them, to UL for testing.
I've got a statistic, if I can sponge it in here, Michael. It says, this is from Professor Bruce Benson, and he says that there are actually three times as many private security personnel in the U.S. than regular police officers.
Yes, and that's a very interesting thing, because we were talking during the break about, and I couldn't put my fingers on the actual statistic, that actually the grounds around NASA are actually monitored by private police, and it doesn't surprise me at all. And so I think that article that you and I were talking about, Luke, also mentioned something that the number of violent events and deaths at the hands of private police were minuscule as compared to...
There's try searching something on the internet. Try looking up, police brutality from private security companies or, private security police versus police brutality from regular police. And even though there's three times as many private police there, try and find any articles on it.
Hmm. Well, I'd like to move on, and I'd say, so, Mark, it's not really accurate then to say that free market anarchism is utopian, because you're not saying that there needs to be a fundamental change in human nature for this to work in practice. In other words, you're not saying that there's no need for police force. You just think that competition should be allowed in areas that the state currently monopolizes. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, exactly. And I have no illusions about other people changing, and I don't want other people to change personally. I think that they should do what they wish, as long as it doesn't hurt me. And I really have no, and I think most anarchists, libertarian anarchists, would agree with this, that there's no push to create a better man in the sense of using force against him and trying to for example, lock him up in a public school for 18 years of his life. I'm happy with man the way he is, as long as he is nonviolent. And if he should try to make his life better, just as I am, and everybody else who is peacefully employed in this world, just make a better life for yourself. Just don't run over other people to do it. Don't kill them. Don't steal from them. It's really as simple as that. We don't expect the world to be... For example, we're not going to... libertarians aren't hoping to make the relationships between sons and their mother-in-laws better or anything like that. It's really quite simple. Everybody should have the ability to pursue his own ends without being subject to threats and theft and being killed abroad, like Obama says he can do to us now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite a realistic philosophy.
I think it is a realistic philosophy, and there's a great book, actually it's not even a book, it's a nice long essay by Leonard Reed. It's a classic I recommend to all of our listeners. It's Anything That's Peaceful. And you can obtain that at fee.org, and also at other places, but that's one place where you can find that. And Anything That's Peaceful by Leonard Reed. And, this is in sharp contrast to what socialists believe. Socialists believe that the human nature has to be transformed. And that's a fundamental disconnect that we have with the socialists.
Yes. Yes, the Marxists in particular. I went to school in Boulder, so I've been around plenty of the Marxists, and that's one thing that they that's almost paramount in their minds. It's not so much about government. They almost have no knowledge of economics or political history or history in general. They just have this obsession with making people better. They have this. It's kind of a perversion of the idea of virtue. They know what virtue is, and they want to shove it down your throat. It's very different from the libertarian position where we say...
Well, so let's be clear about this. You know, under this free market, anarchism, peaceful cooperation kind of model, what you're saying, what I'm hearing in our conversation is that there will still be crime under free market anarchism as there will be under any system. But under this system, the incentives and the institutions are different for those services that governments or that are provided. And in other words, they're aligned in a way that promotes peaceful cooperation. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Although I do think that there would be less crime in the sense that a lot of the victimless crimes, like somebody smoking pot in his basement, isn't going to be locked up in some place for his whole life. But
well,
I would say that
isn't a crime in the first place, and what we're really doing there is we're declaring it so.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So, Luke, please go on.
I wanted to get back just to the policing one because I know that's for many people. I think if they're hearing that for the first time, they would probably be thinking this could never work in practice. Would you be able to go into it just a little bit for us, Mark, to think that why you believe that private police firms are more desirable over government police?
Yeah, and I think maybe this is sort of my tradesman bias, but I really don't think that I need anybody to protect me. I have guns, and I don't need anybody to really protect me. I can take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's one angle. I'm sure that there are plenty of people who feel the same way. But I think in the age of the Internet, this sort of idea that the police are out there to protect us is just ridiculous. Just spend 2 minutes Googling police beats up, punches woman in the face or something like that. You'll come up with tons of videos. It's just sort of shocking to think that these people who you fear when you're driving and when you're out at the bars, suddenly these people are our protectors. It seems almost ridiculous in the age of the Internet when we have access to all this information of what they're actually doing. But in terms of privatization, we see this all the time. We see this in any private store we go into, there's private security, and they're courteous, and that's not to say that they're not protecting the property. They wouldn't be paid to do what they're doing if they weren't. So there is a real need for security, and people are willing to pay for it. Obviously, they are. But these people driving around in cars, locking people in cages, and wearing blue polyester are... It's pretty ludicrous to think that these people are protecting us, to me, anyway.
I guess also, sort of, you know, if you were to go into some sort of store with private police, and if you're going there one day and you got punched in the face or you got beat up, you would never, ever return there again. And I'm sure you'd tell many of your friends about the experience you had there. So you can actually, by not shopping there, you can put them out of business. But if that happens to you from normal police, well then, you know, who are you supposed to turn to? I guess you have to turn to the police, but they're the people who did it.
Exactly, exactly. This WikiLeaks thing is sort of along those lines as well, where you have Amazon and these other companies who have done something that a lot of people in the world really resent, dropping WikiLeaks, and they're subject to profit penalties for their actions. Amazon is subject or potentially subject to a big boycott, apparently. But the police, no matter what they do, they're not going to lose their jobs. Many times they can kill people and not even get put on a leave of absence, without pay anyway. It's a radically different situation.
You know, I think what scares a lot of people about this idea of getting rid of government and trying to create structures of peaceful cooperation is that government is typically viewed as a sort of caring parent that looks after society so that if anyone is down on their luck, they can always fall back on government support. And you're arguing, Mark, that we should get rid of this. But I think sometimes we forget to include all the costs of government, and I don't just mean how much money they take from us in taxes, but also the very real human costs. If you're honest with yourself, though, you really look back at history and the world we live in, and you realize that the state itself doesn't have a very good record when it comes to protecting human life, does it? And we could talk about R.J. Rummel's work. That would be
Yeah, absolutely. I think his is his statistic 170 million people killed by government?
It's 262.
262, yeah. It's
262. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's a shocking figure. I mean, the number of people who have been just slaughtered, and we're not talking about just soldiers being shot in some pointless war, which would be bad enough. We're talking about civilians being starved to death. We're talking about people being tortured to death, and just really the destruction of civilization by governments in the last 100 years.
Yeah, actually, let me jump in here. What we're referring to, folks, is a book by R.J. Rummel, R-U-M-M-E-L, called Death by Government, and the term is democide, C-I-D-E, and he points out that in the 20th century, 262 million innocent non-combatants were actually killed at the hands of government. And by the way, we're talking about their own government.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's the most amazing statistic in that. Well, unfortunately, on that cheery note, we're going to have to end this particular segment. And we are going to be coming back, folks, with our final segment with Mark Crivelli and Luke McGraw on anarchy and peaceful cooperation. And so please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay. And we'll be back for our final segment in just a minute. Stay with us. Thank you. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and I'm going to hand the ball over to Luke McGraw once again. Go ahead, Luke.
Sure. You know, when it comes to discussions such as this, I'm sure most people have a ton of what-if scenarios that say, how would this be handled in a truly free society, or how would that be handled? What will probably surprise most people, though, I think, is just how much work is actually being done in this area by well-regarded social scientists, and particularly economists, who have really tackled so many of these problems head-on and given what I think, anyway, pretty good answers. What are some of the books or authors you'd recommend, Mark, for people who, if they're interested in this, if they want to find out more?
Well, you know, my academic career was in political science, and there's a couple actually mainstream guys, very mainstream people in political science that are worth, and also sort of off the libertarian path a little bit. They're libertarians, but not as widely read. One is A. John Simmons, is that his name? he's the foremost scholar of John Locke, and he wrote a book called On the Edge of Anarchy, and that book is absolutely phenomenal. And also, obviously, anything by Murray Rothbard. The Ethics of Liberty is literally what made me an anarchist, and I was sort of a hardcore Republican before I read that book, and I found it by accident in the library, and I read it over and over again for 2 weeks, and I was trying to figure out some sort of refutation, and I was an anarchist in 2 weeks. So that one is probably number one. And I would also say that Lysander Spooner's book, or his the collective works of Lysander Spooner, are really powerful and really sort of down to earth to people like to lowly tradesmen like me that just hit hard. And obviously Hans Hermann Hoppe's book, Democracy: The God That Failed, is without equal. Anybody who believes that freedom and democracy go together has to read that book.
Well, I'm going to interrupt here and have you, Luke, also recommend a couple of books.
There's, I know one which I think is particularly good is by Morris and Linda Tannehill. It's The Market for Liberty. That's a really good book, which I got a lot out of. And another one on a different sort of bent is David Friedman's The Machinery of Freedom. That's also, I know, regarded usually a classic in that sort of literature.
And then Walter Block's work.
And then, of course, Walter Block. Anything by Walter Block's always good.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, Gil Guillory's new articles are also worth reading as well. Very, very brilliant analyses of how you can handle stuff in the private sector, security in particular. It's fascinating.
Okay.
There's an objection. Sorry,
go ahead. We're going to run out of time, Luke, and so we're going to have to actually make this next question pretty short. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Going to need a short objection. Question and a short answer.
People often said, okay, then if this system's so good, why isn't it in existence right now? So I can say, then, well, what do you think? Why do you think that you're so much smarter than the vast majority of the people who live in the world who think that we do need a government?
Well, I don't think I'm smarter. I just want them to leave me alone. I think that's really kind of a short answer for people who everybody's just the majority of people are just ordinary people like me who are trying to make a living, and we just want people out of our way. So it's not like I think that Hillary Clinton is infinitely stupider than I am, even if I do believe that. it's not really relevant. We just want them out of our way. Just leave us alone. Let us take care of the problems of the world, and we can do it. And that's what tradesmen do. That's what everybody in the private sector does. So, just
all right. Well, Mark, I'm going to have to interrupt you, and I want to thank you very much for being with us today, Mr. Mark Crivelli and Mr. Luke McGraw. It's been a great pleasure to have you guys here on Radio Free Market. This is Michael McKay and Radio Free Market. Please visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com, where you can subscribe for free to all our shows on iTunes, and until next week, wherever you are, please stand up for freedom. Thank you for listening.